Namen Jesu, der Heilige
Chiranandajoti Swaryanyaha Murtiman.
The Brahmajyoti is fulgence, which is full of transcendental bliss, is directly perceived there in its form.
Lakshmi Jini Gunaraha Lakshmi Rasamaj Krishna Vamsi Kareya Priya Sakhi Kaya.
The devotees there are all goddesses of fortune. They surpass the goddess of fortune who abides in Vaikuntha. In Vrindavan, where Krishna always plays his transcendental fruit, which is his dear companion. Text 27 is a quote from the Brahma Samhita. The damsels in Vrindavan, the gopis, are super excellent goddesses of fortune. The enjoyer of Vrindavan is the supreme personality of Godhead, Krishna. The trees there are all wish-fulfilling trees, and the land is made of transcendental texture. The water is all nectar, and talking is singing. The walking is dancing, and the constant companion of Krishna is his flute. The effulgence of transcendental bliss is experienced everywhere. Therefore, Vrindavan Dham is the only approachable abode. From Brahma Samhita 556, Sukhuna Amit, One of the patterns that I'm becoming increasingly aware of from study of Chaitanya Charitamrita is the literary technique. Srila Prabhupada does it in his purpose. Is say something and then quote a verse to back it up. If you follow this verse that we just read from Brahma Samhita, prior to that, as the writer Krishnadas Kaviraj at this point put the same words into the mouth of Swaro Damodar as he's speaking to Srivas Thakur, he's explaining that Dhamma Dhamma's major touchstone, that Amadeus, the speech there is like music, the movements there are all like dancing, and then he quotes this verse. You'll see in Srila Prabhupada's purpose. He'll say something, and then he'll quote a verse to back it up. Ramananda Roy did the same thing. Lord Chaitanya would say, what is the goal of life? He would say this, then he would quote a verse. And Lord Chaitanya would say, that's it, don't quote the next thing. He would say, well, listen. And then he would quote a verse. In other words, there are verses which, from the Vedas, which are unlimited, which specifically imbibe truths in themselves. And the acharyas have the sense of applying those specific verses to each particular circumstance accordingly. Another verse that I quote now is from Guru Mahapal Prabhupada's Krishna Kanam. Chintana nishtarana bhushana angananam Chindara pushpada vasthara vasthanam Chindara nevadanam namakandanem The anklets on the damsels of Vrindavan are made of chintamani. The trees are wish-fulfilling trees, and they produce flowers with which the gopis decorate themselves. There are also wish-fulfilling cows, namadenus, which deliver unlimited quantities of milk. These cows constitute the wealth of Vrindavan. Thus, Vrindavan's opulence is blissful and simple. Text 29. Suni prema veshe nirte kareshi nivasa
Ashatale bhajaya kare atta atta hasa
Shivas Thakur then began to dance in ecstatic love. He vibrated sounds by slapping his armpits and palms of his hands, and he laughed very loudly. Dharharasu bharasa prabhupavesha sumhira Sayarasa veshti prabhu mitya arambhira. Thus, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard these descriptions about the pure transcendental mellow of Srimati Radharani. Absorbed in transcendental ecstasy, the Lord began to dance. Rasa veshti prabhu mitya swabhupa dhana
Bala Bala Bali Prabhupate Vijakana.
While Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing in ecstatic love, and Swarupanandagara was singing, the Lord said, "Go on singing, go on singing." The Lord then extended his own ears. Raja Rasa Gita Sumi Prema Pukhaira Purushottama Dhamma Prabhu Prema Pashaira. Thus Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstatic love was awakened by hearing the songs of the God. And in this way he inundated Purushottama Jagannath Puri, the love of God. Lakshmi Devi Anandhavi Dina Gherani Jagare Raghu Nitya Kare Vaira Nitya Mahara. Finally, the goddess of fortune returns to her heart. In due course of time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing, afternoon Prabhu. So this is a continuing narration of the Harapanchami festival, in which, if you remember, we'll go back a few months. But what I'm going to do, because tomorrow is Gaudhastami, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are some of the most nectarian descriptions of Srimati Radharani, her quality, her exchanges with Krishna, and how she pleases Krishna. I described it in this section. So we'll go back and describe the Harapanchami festival, which will then be fresh in everybody's minds since we've been listening to this for several weeks. So prepare us for the festival. Come on, and glorification. So, after Lord Jagannath is brought from his main temple to the Gundicha temple, which is a replica of Vrindavan, Sundarachala, then the festival goes on for a few more days, and on the fifth day, Harapanchami is brought. Then the goddess of fortune, who's been left back in her temple at home, Lord Jagannath said, "I've just gone out for a stroll, need to get out, I've been sick. Going down for the forest, coming back soon." When he doesn't arrive back quickly, she becomes angry and collected and comes very opulently decorated to chastise him and display her opulence in order to attract him. When the devotees, and what happens is that her servants actually berate her Jagannath servants. They capture them, they bind them, they protest against them bringing Lord Jagannath away and not understanding why he's gone in such a simple abode from such an opulent circumstance. When Swarupanandagara saw the mood of the goddess of fortune, he became surprised and said, "There's no egoistic pride within the three worlds. At least I have never seen it or feared it. When a woman is neglected and disappointed, out of egotistic pride, she gives up her ornaments and morosely sits down on the ground, marking lines on it with her nails. I have heard of this kind of pride in Satyabhama, Krishna's proudest queen, and I've also heard about it in the gopis, in the Dhamma, or the reservoirs, chanting with the mouths. But in the case of the goddess of fortune, I see a different kind of pride. She manifests her own opulences and even goes with her soldiers to attack her husband." Hearing this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Please tell me of the varieties of egotistic pride manifested in Vrindavan." And this became a gateway for Swarupanandagara to begin discussing the different types of gopis and their groups in Vrindavan. He described how there are restless gopis, there are sober gopis, there are those that are both restless and sober, those that are talkative, those that are quiet by nature, and basically came down to the point where there are two different types of gopis, right wing and left wing, those that are always submissive by nature as a dominant feature in their world. And those that are always feisty, a little bit eager to exchange in that way. as he mentioned that all the gopis are like millions of tributaries and rivers and rivulets flowing to the ocean of love of Krishna. So there are unlimited types of gopis. And he became absorbed in describing these different kinds of heroines. Then he said, of all the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the chief. She is the jewel mine of ecstatic love and the source of all purified transcendental conjugal melodies. Radharani has grown up and her character is equal poise. She is always deeply absorbed in ecstatic love and always feeling in the mood of a left-wing gopi. Because she is a left-wing gopi, her womanly anger is always awakening. The Krishna derives transcendental bliss from her activities. And then there's a famous quote by Rupa Goswami that discussed at a previous class and described how, even though Krishna had made special arrangements for Srimati Radharani, the Vasudevas, still, the progress of loving affairs between a young boy and a young girl is by nature crooked, like the movements of a snake. Because of this, two types of anger arise between a young boy and a girl. Anger with a cause and anger without a cause. As Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard these talks, this ocean of transcendental bliss increased. He therefore told Swarupdhanagar, speaking. And thus Swarupdhanagar continued. Srimati Radharani's love is highly advanced ecstasy. All her dealings are completely pure and devoid of material tinge. Indeed, her dealings are 10 times purer than gold. As soon as Radharani gets a chance to see Krishna, her mind is suddenly decorated with various ecstatic ornaments. This was the second gate that opened the door. And so, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, please describe these different ecstasies of Srimati Radharani that come about in her different exchanges with Krishna. There's one that we're going to discuss. There were several mentioned in the story, but the one that I chose is called Kila Kinchita Bhava. So this will be described, and we have some nice reading from a book by Raghunath Das Goswami and Rupa Goswami, which describe the events that came about that created these kinds of emotions. Pride, ambition, weeping, smiling, envy, fear, and anger are the 7 loving symptoms manifested by a jubilant shrinking away. And these symptoms are called Kila Kinchita Bhava. There are 8 symptoms of ecstatic love on the platform of transcendental jubilation. And when they are combined and tasted by Krishna, the Lord's mind is completely satisfied. Indeed, they are compared to a combination of yogurt, candy, ghee, honey, black pepper, camphor, and cardamom, which, when mixed together, are very tasty and sweet. Lord Sri Krishna is thousands upon thousands of times more satisfied when he sees Srimati Radharani's face light up from this combination of ecstatic love than he is from direct union with her. So what is it in Krishna? What is it in Srimati Radharani when her emotions and body manifest such a feature before Krishna that he's even more pleased to see this in her than he is with direct union with her in an intimate conjugal atmosphere? What is that? So let us enter into how this particular emotion or group of emotions manifests together. He's describing that just like these seemingly contradictory emotions in someone are compared to those different spices and ingredients in yogurt preparation. So this is from there's 2 books which describe the Dan Kali Lila. This is when Krishna set up the toll when the gopis were trying to bring ghee and butter to the sacrifice. What happened was that Vasudev in Mathura was feeling anxious as the boys grew up in Vrindavan. Nobody really knew that Krishna was Vasudev's son, but everyone knew that Balaram was his son and Rukmini was staying with the family of Dhanmaraj and Mother Yasoda. So Vasudev hired Brahmins to go to Govindakund near Govardhan Hill and perform a sacrifice for the protection and benefit of Balaram, who was away from home. Purnamasi, who is Yogamaya and the head of organizing different affairs in Vrindavan, told Nandi Mukhi, you go and you tell Krishna and Albert was that the girls are going to be bringing ghee and yogurt to Govindakund for this sacrifice. So, as the gopis heard that this sacrifice was going on in Vedic culture, there's two different descriptions. Rupa Goswami says that they knew they would get paid, so they started getting all their ingredients together and they would go to the sacrificial arena where the Brahmins were preparing to perform the sacrifice. And Raghunath Das Goswami, in his book, Dhamkeli, one is Dhamkeli Chintamani, and the other is Dhamkeli Kudu. One is in the form of a play, and the other is in the form of another description. So, as he says that the gopis knew that they would get remuneration, and indeed the Brahmins gave them jewels and different things, and they were given the deed and different milk preparations for the sacrifice. So as the girls are gathered together and walking along Govardhan Hill, try to keep in mind the verses that we just read. Why is Vrindavan considered more opulent than Dwarka or Vaikuntha? It doesn't manifest like that. Can anyone have some insight why Vrindavan would be considered more opulent and higher abode than something so opulent as Dwarka or Vaikuntha? It's because the atmosphere of Krishna manifests his qualities most fully. Let's tie that in, let's weave that into the atmosphere which surrounds it. Vrindavan, and especially Radhakund. Why is Radhakund, the Rupa Goswami said, it's the highest place in the universe? It's because the atmosphere is so conducive to loving exchanges between Radha and Krishna, and the gopis and Krishna. Out in Radhakund, there are no elders. In Govardhan, you remember the story? When they were all walking along, and everybody, it was during the time when Lord Brahma had stolen the cows and the cats, and the cowherd men saw the cowherd boys and their loving priests. And the young cows saw their mothers, and the mothers loved the priests. So everybody was seeing one another. This was a Govardhan, not Radhakund. With all these elders around, the intimacy of Radha and Krishna's noonday pastimes, an intimate, quiet, unobstructed atmosphere doesn't take place. That's why Radhakund is considered so high, because it has an atmosphere. So as the gopis were walking along, they're carrying their butter and pots on their head. Radharani's wearing a bed sari with a golden pot. And they're talking amongst themselves. And they said,
of all the devotees, this Govardhan Hill is the best, my dear friend. This hill supplies Krishna and Balaram, as well as their calves, cows, and cowherd boyfriends, with all kinds of necessities. Water for drinking, very soft grass, leaves, fruits, flowers, and vegetables. In this way, the hill offers respect to the Lord. Being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, Govardhan Hill appears very jubilant.
Hearing the tinkling of their ankle bells and the conversations in the distance, the cowherd boys said, black bench, and they put it on the path. And they stood there with their sticks. And as the gopis approached, they saw the group of cowherd boys in the distance that was set up totally. And the meeting started to come together. So this is what happened when they got closer. Overwhelmed with compassion, Radha stared at the giving back. Her body became bathed with tears and perspiration. She trembled, and only with great difficulty was she able to keep the glistening pot of ghee from slipping out of her bandage. Sri Krishna was dressed in the most charming and elegant garments and ornaments, as befitting the wealthiest of Chola collectors. He carried a flute and a buffalo horn bugle, and was accompanied by many cowherd boyfriends holding sticks in the role of toll collectors. Silent with contempt, the gopis stared at Krishna. They gracefully approached him. Seeing the sweet-hearted, charming gopis maddened with anger, Madhavamba smiled and angrily spoke the following words to Krishna. Intoxicated by the youthfulness and accompanied by her maddened friends, proud Radha, although only a weak woman, now approaches you, old friend. Why don't you forcibly check her before she presses her hand on your body? As he gracefully walked, Sri Krishna moved the bells on his body, making a tinkling sound filled with all amorous potencies, and fully able to defeat the approaching lion of Sri Radha. As he bewildered her with these amorous potencies, he spoke to his Gopa associates the following words in pretended anger. Madhavamba speaks the truth. These wicked girls are ignoring my toll and probably going away. Just see their arrogance. My friends, I will now single-handedly force them to pay the toll. Sound the flutes and buffalo horn bugles. Stop these girls. With my own arms, I will personally stop Radha, the leader of these crooked-hearted girls. O Subal, leader of 1,000 toll collectors, you forcibly stopped Kishak. O Ujwala, protector of the toll booth, my friend, you stopped Chittadi. O Vasant, leader of the assembly, you stopped Champapalata and Tugavidhi. O Kukila, most expert leader of 1,000 guides, you stopped Ravita. Speaking many arrogant words, the cowherd boys surrounded Radha and her friends and stopped them from proceeding. Radha jubilantly assailed Krishna with many crooked words that were actually disguised as prayers of glorification. Krishna appeared to become angry and said to the proud Radha, "Dear proud thief, I know that you regularly travel in these forest pathways, carefully hiding these milk products and lucratively selling them on the black market. By good fortune, you have now fallen into my hands. I will now arrest you, bind you with ropes, and take you before King Kamadhi. He will certainly be pleased with you for bringing you, and will reward me by giving you the precious jewel of your youthfulness. So may I actually bring you insignificant girls before the great King Kamadhi? No, I should be involved with you tiny candidates. Instead, I will simply teach you that I am the unrivaled monarch of this common brother. My dear thief, if you cannot immediately pay this toll, I will bind you with this garland of forest flowers, I will bite your lips with my teeth, I will scratch your breasts with my 10 weapons that are my fingernails, and in this way I will punish you for your crime." As the restless, fickle-minded Krishna spoke in this way, he began to grab the corner of Srimati Radharani's right side. Beautiful, intelligent Radha, gazing at him from the corners of her eyes, of her quickly moving eyes, angrily said to the Supreme Personality of Radha,
"Stay far away from me. Don't touch me. You are a cruel, shameless rape. And I am a pure-hearted girl, bringing this deed to the sacrificial arena. Your spoiled touch will contaminate this deed and make it unsuitable for offering in your auspicious sacrifice."
This is the moment. This is where the moment of the Kilakinchita Bhava manifests. When at that moment Krishna is trying to grab her sari, she's filled with all this mixture, ocean of emotions, everyone surrounding her. and Rupa Goswami's involves this beautiful verse. May the sight of Srimati Radharani's Kila Kinchita ecstasy, which is like a bouquet, bring good fortune to all. When Sri Krishna blocked Radharani's way to the Dandavatam, there was laughter within her heart. Her eyes grew bright, and fresh tears flowed from her eyes, reddening them. Due to her sweet relationship with Krishna, her eyes were more enthusiastic, and her crying subsided. She appeared even more beautiful. Now, in the downline from Rupa Goswami, with the commentaries of the various acharyas, we, who sit down 500 years later, get the fruit which has been even more ripened and more palpable by these descriptions, because they've been churned by these great acharyas. Have this from Govinda Lilamrita, also by Krishnadas Bhagavad Gita. Agitated by tears, Srimati Radharani's eyes were tinged with red, just like the eastern horizon at sunrise. Her lips began to move with jubilation and lusty desire. Her eyebrows curled, and her lotus-like face smiled mildly. Seeing Radharani's face exhibit such emotion, Lord Sri Krishna felt a million times happier than when he embraced her. Indeed, Lord Sri Krishna's happiness is not at all unbelievable. So this is Swarup Damodara, glorifying the love of the gopis and Srimati Radharani and Vrindavan. Hearing this description, Srivas Thakura smiled and told Swarup Damodara, "My dear sir, please, just see how humble my goddess of fortune is. As far as Vrindavan's opulence is concerned, it consists of a few flowers and some twigs, some minerals from the hills and a few peacock flowers, and a plant known as Kunja. When Lord Jagannath decided to see Vrindavan, he went there, upon him, yes, the goddess of fortune experienced breathlessness and jealousy. She wondered, why did Lord Jagannath give up so much opulence to Lord Vrindavan? To make him a laughing stock, the goddess of fortune made arrangements for much bigger decoration." Srivas Thakura continued to address Swarup Damodara. "No gopis are engaged in boiling milk and churning yogurt, but my mistress, the goddess of fortune, sits on a throne made of jewels and gems." Srivas Thakura, who was enjoying the mood of Narada Muni, thus made jokes. Hearing him, all the personal associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to smile. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then told Srivas Thakura, "My dear Srivas, your nature is exactly like that of Narada Muni. The Supreme Personality of Godhead's opulence is having a direct influence upon you." Which brings us to the beginning of today's verse. Hearing same Srivas Thakura in this moment, Swarup Damodara became again animated. So, 217. Swarup Damodara, so Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then told Srivas Thakura, "My dear Srivas, your nature is exactly like that of Narada Muni. The Supreme Personality of Godhead's opulence is having a direct influence upon you. Swarup Damodara is a pure devotee of Vrindavan. He does not even know what opulence is, for he is simply absorbed in pure devotional service." Swarup Damodara then retorted, "My dear Srivas, please hear me. With all attention, you have forgotten the transcendental opulence of Vrindavan. The natural opulence of Vrindavan is just like an ocean. The opulence of Dwarka and Vaikuntha is not even to be compared to a drop. Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, full of all opulences, and his complete opulences are exhibited only in Vrindavan Dham. Vrindavan Dham is made of transcendental touchstone. Its entire surface is the source of all valuable jewels, and a Chintamani stone is used to decorate the feet of the maid servants of Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a natural forest of Vrindavan of desire trees and creepers, and inhabitants do not want anything but the fruits and flowers of those desire trees. In Vrindavan there are cows that fulfill all desires, humble beings. And their number is unlimited. They graze from forest to forest and deliver only milk. People want nothing else. In Vrindavan, the natural speech of the people sounds like music, and the natural motion resembles a dance. The water of Vrindavan is nectar, and the Brahmajal effulgence, which is full of transcendental bliss, is directly perceived there in its form. The gopis there are also goddesses of fortune, and they surpass the goddesses of fortune who abide in Vaikuntha. In Vrindavan, Lord Krishna is always playing his transcendental flute, which is his dear companion. And then there's the quote from Brahma Sanhita. The damsels of Vrindavan, the gopis, are super excellent goddesses of fortune. The enjoyer in Vrindavan is the supreme personality of Bhagavan, Krishna. The trees there are all wish-fulfilling trees, and the land is made of transcendental texture. The water is all nectar, and chanting is singing. The walking, dancing, and the constant companion of Krishna is his food. The effulgence of transcendental bliss is experienced everywhere. Therefore, Vrindavan Dham is only relishable to Bodhi. So, I'm hoping that this shared some insight into the glories of Vrindavan, why it's so exalted and intimate and pleasurable for these particular pastimes. And if you keep this in mind, which has been brought to my attention due to having studied and given class to do this, you'd be amazed. I was amazed at how often the descriptions concur with this. Just a simple cooing of birds, or the speaking of parrots, or the sound of the Jamuna River, or the fragrance of the jasmines and the flowers. There's a beautiful description of Vrindavan's manifestation on the Sarat Purnima that we'll read about in a few months. And the atmosphere that's created as the sun sets and the sky turns pink and the moon rises and the Jamuna River is there and the fragrance of the flowers comes to Sri Krishna, it inspired him to want to engage in these kinds of pastimes. We have no access to these things other than him. Atasi Krishna Madhi Nabhavid Ranindra. Krishna's name, his form, his qualities, his pastimes, his abode, Nabhavid Ranindra means that they're not accessible to our senses. We can't see them, we can't taste them, we can't relish them. In material senses, they don't exist on this plane. But, Seva Muke Ijivadu. Svayam eva svaratya das. Seva muke, seva, jivadro. One who engages his tongue in service to the Supreme. Seva muke, jivadro. Svayam eva svaratya das. Sporti. Sporti means a vision, a glimpse, an actual, the pure devotees, even though in the material world, when they become absorbed in Krishna Lila, they actually enter the Lila. And there are different examples of acharyas, pure devotees who manifested symptoms. Probably one of the most famous is Shyamananda Purport. I think it's a story when he got the Tila from the ankle level, that was here on this plane of existence. So, how important it is to hear from the right source. And this is all within the Vedas, which again, as we see here, that pattern. Oftentimes I look on database.com, it has a nice feature when you go to the page of the chapter and you can scroll down the whole page with just the verses, not the purports in the book. It has all the transliterations and I can't really see the patterns of groups of verses together. But this particular one it almost jumps out the page at you where you see these different descriptions that Swarov Gadagar is saying, then there's the quote from Brahma Samhita. So I found a nice quote, with a lecture clip by Srila Prabhupada, where he explains how this should always be done. In big culture.
Is that the one that's in this, the player?
Or, no.
No?
It's in Chrome.
Chrome. Press this, I guess.
Whatever he'll say, immediately he is supported by Vedic evidence. You can say anything. You can manufacture anything. No, that it does not do. It does not violate the principle. So I found this an interesting concept.
Is there another page? Excuse me?
You can try Firefox and see what it says. It's on there for those at home. If you want to watch it, it's a YouTube video call. Prabhupada says, quote, authority.
Is that the next page?
Yes. In any case, these are the revelations that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is presenting to the world, reviving Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan thousands of years after they were performed, but bringing them through sound vibration and manifestations of these dhammas to our present reality. Can actually go to these places. Other notes. You can go to Kokilaban, and you can be the pastime. You can go to Govardhan Hill. You can go to this place at Don Guthrie. If you go to Govardhan Hill, when you first go to Govardhan, let's say from Radhapur, and you come into the town, those that have done Govardhan Perkham, when you go up through the town, you go by the market, then you take a left, instead of going over the hill, you take a left and begin your Perkham. Right to the right, there's a Don Guthrie temple, Mandir. That's where this pastime took place. Apparently, once Gungo and the geography was much different then. And I think, as I mentioned, Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami became so absorbed in this particular exchange between Radha and Krishna that they wrote books. And this part that I read was only the beginning of the book. The rest of the book is continued exchanges between the gopis and Krishna.
Are there any other comments or questions? I was noticing that in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 17, verse 15, it almost quotes the same exact words there. It's the austerity of speech. And in the purport, he says, when you're in the spiritual circles, whatever you say, you're supposed to support it with a verse. So that's his paraphrase.
Yes. This is penance as far as speaking is concerned. Besides that, one should not talk nonsense. When speaking in spiritual circles, one's statements must be upheld by the scripture. One should at once quote from scriptural authority to take back up what he is saying. At the same time, such talk should be very pleasurable to the ear. By such discussions, one may derive the highest benefit and elevate human society. There is limitless stock of Vedic literature, and one should study it. This is called penance of speech.
You mentioned just one small thing that was extra special.
I'm sure they're not limited. but that feature, even the cowherd folks, maybe one or two preliminary sakas, sometimes may go and engage in making arrangements. But the goal, the main idea, is free flow, without obstruction, without, like, even if Balaram is an older brother, is near a younger brother, and the younger brother is with his girlfriend. By nature, he'll be shy, and so will she. So that shyness acts as a deterrent to free flow. We have to speak of an elder, especially in Vedic culture. We're talking about parakeya rasa as it manifests. So in order for that free exhibition of full okay, then there must be an atmosphere which is conducive to that development and those exchanges. And that's why we're at a point.
Something becomes optimal because it's desirous. Mm-hmm. So something that is desirable.
Yes. Opulence means something that's desirable. It doesn't necessarily mean jewel or miracle or whatever. The story of the goddess of fortune coming out of the ocean of milk. And when she was generated, all the different many gods and the king, and making all kinds of offerings to her. And it said that she bestows all opulences on the lotus. She becomes situated at the chest of Lord Vishnu. And therefore, when anyone approaches Lord Vishnu with devotion, she sees that devotee. And she bestows her opulences upon that devotee. And then it was described that some of those opulences are good behavior, proper attitude, or something else, transcendental qualities of a devotee. These are opulences. We tend to think in this material world, opulences are something that you can buy something for. But they're actually not necessary. That was a beautiful point, thank you. What opulence means something that's desirable.
What should the Prabhupada explains in that her part of the promise of Hita, he says that the devotees have no desires to achieve. So that's the Vrindavan, they don't
desire. They don't want anything. They got the milk.
Yeah.
Oh, they don't desire anything because of so
the so-called opulence is that they're not interested in it.
Stanzas that Shishupal could also be seen as a prayer. Or Lord Indra, when the cowherd then of Vrindavan decided not to offer him the Yogya goods, but to offer them to Govardhan, he became angry and started speaking very badly about this little cowherd boy. Talking to the cowherd when he brought him in actuality, Mother Saraswati can make those same things prayers. So I imagine it's not described, but it sounds like a very similar experience where, although she's berating them, she's actually glorifying them in another way that the saints could be.
actually everything is like that. That when people are talking about Krishna, even when, like as you point out, you should follow the path of learning Saraswati, turns it around, and we're being accessed to this knowledge, which automatically does, because we understand everything's a perversion reflection, so you take the perversion out.
And then what you're trying to say, that's why I'm going to be right, you see everything. That's Krishna.
Each today. And one last thing was that there's, what we're discussing is in that verse about the tattvas. Remember there were six tattvas where it mentioned Krishna consciousness means Krishna tattva, Bhakti tattva, Prema tattva, Sara. Tattva, Rasa Tattva, Vila Tattva, Heart. So this is like the Rasa Tattva, understanding everything, Rasa Tattva, the Bhakti, Rasa, the Sindhu, the ocean of understanding everything through Rasa, as opposed to any other method of understanding.
Next, if the water is in that adventure, if it doesn't go into the focus, if it's still in the entrance of bliss, if the record is received there, it's formed. It's accepting.
I mean, the question is that Ramajati effulgence is the effulgence emanating from his body. If someone only has a realization of Brahmana effulgence, he doesn't have the realization
I'll be able to explain it.
Just like you just did, explain it.
Thank you, Drew.